What's up, everyone? Welcome to this episode of Creator Support, the show where we answer your questions about the business of being a creator.
Today on the show, we are answering some hard-hitting questions. First off, whether or not you are wasting your life trying to become a YouTuber. Next, we discuss whether or not you should bring on a manager. We also talk about creators who are now getting sued for promoting FTX.
We start by talking about one of the strangest days we've ever had working as creators, which turns out it was today, and you're about to find out why. So if you make it to the deep end, let us know. You know what they say, Cole?
What's that?
Anything can happen when you run a creator business.
Anything can happen. They do say that.
They do say that.
I've heard that, yeah.
But I'm saying this because today...
It happened.
It happened. The most unexpected thing happened. So we were sitting here on this set about to record this episode about 5.5 hours ago.
And then, boom.
An explosion. And instantly, all the lights go out. There's a scream upstairs in our office and we're like, what just happened? We run outside... And we're trying to figure it out. And there's a bunch of people huddled over an animal.
A man picks up the animal by its legs and walks towards us. It's a duck.
Yeah.
The duck flew into the power lines, into the power box, and it exploded. Duck day.
Duck day.
We will forever remember duck day at the office because everyone had to go home. This is hours later now.
Yes,
the power has finally come back.
So
and we can record.
I just want to set the context for like what type of day we're having and you know what this episode might be like.
This is an anything can happen episode.
You know what they say? Anything can happen when you run a creator business.
Yeah. Welcome to duck day.
Well, let's get into our first question. Let's just get right into it. So this one comes from the subreddit. It's actually a pretty heavy question. I feel like I'm wasting my life away chasing after this YouTube dream, but I can't imagine myself doing anything else. So this is kind of a long question. Storms knocked out the internet and power in my area for the past 4 days, and this is the longest time I've ever gone without working on YouTube, and it's driving me insane. But the more I thought about it, the more I realized I have nothing else in my life. In chasing the YouTube dream, I've consciously stepped away from a lot of my friendships and other activities because all of my time has gone into working on this dream. I work full time, and then after I work my job, I spend my evenings writing, filming, and editing, and I love it. But now that I've been reflecting a lot, I realized it feels like I almost have nothing at all. I'm sitting here thinking about what I've got to show for it. I got about 800 subscribers, and that's it. Goes on to say, how can I learn to balance doing stuff I know I need to, friends, family, and rest days, with what I want to do, which is literally just work nonstop until I make it? First of all, thank you for sharing, because I think this is a common feeling amongst not only creators, but entrepreneurs. My recollection of being in this point in my life was I had a very loose definition of what it meant to make it. And because of that, there was no other option but to just work. And I thought if I worked myself to the ground, it would magically happen. I would make it.
Yeah, I felt as well that being busy, filling my hours was what I needed to do to get to whatever making it meant.
Right.
And now reflecting on it, I actually have a lot of peace and calm knowing that just putting out creative work that I cared about, spending time working with people that I cared about, I have ended up in a place that I am happy with, but I could have never dreamt that this would be the career. I didn't come out of college saying, I want to be a YouTube creator. It wasn't even the thing. I didn't say I want to be a podcaster. I just wanted to be fulfilled and to make sure I knew what it meant to be fulfilled. And I think it's important to know that while you may want to be a YouTube creator, that may be the aspiration. You actually may end up somewhere different just via this output.
Sure, yeah.
5 years from now, even if you only have 1,000 more subscribers, alongside that journey, something else will have happened. It's unrealistic, I think, to stay on that path for that long if you care about what you're doing and you're feeling fulfilled and not have that energy go somewhere positive.
Well, I think the thing that you said, you spend your evenings writing, filming, and editing, and you love it. Whether you have 800 subscribers or 800,000 subscribers, it's kind of a similar thing. You know, like we have over 1 million subscribers on our main channel. We have an office, we have a studio, we have a team. I still find myself spending my evenings, my weekends, editing, filming, writing, working on the channel. The same thing we were doing when we had 100 subscribers. So I think what you recognize is that lifestyle, you have to design that lifestyle to be something that you appreciate and that you love. and that you're not sacrificing too much for, because wherever you end up, it's the same thing. It's just the opportunity to get paid more to do that lifestyle. Like, this is the lifestyle of being a creator. So I think what the most important thing that any creator can do who's listening to this, or anyone, is write down what's enough for you. Like, what's making it? What is a certain amount of money that feels comfortable for you? What are you doing every day that makes you feel happy? Like, all of that is extremely important to be in concert with your goal setting on, like, how many subscribers you want, how many videos you're going to put out a week. Because once you quote unquote make it, which means, I think it means you're getting paid a full-time wage to do creative work. You're getting paid a full-time wage, but you're doing the same creative work. You might still not have time to hang out with your friends and family and all of that. It doesn't just automatically unlock, at least in my experience.
And even if you do end up in a situation that was your version of making it, at some point you may not like how that feels anymore. You may change. I mean, you and I were talking yesterday about how we kind of missed sometimes just creative agency style work, where you make videos for other people, where you help. We were helping other creators for a long time.
Yeah.
We were working directly with brands that there was a part of us that felt very fulfilled with that style of work.
Yeah.
Where you're not on camera, you're not the main draw for the video or the story that you're telling. And that's something that I didn't expect to feel when I was doing that work.
Sure.
I wanted out of that work.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Yeah.
And now, years later, I look back on it kind of fondly and think, you know, that there were a lot of elements of that that were really fulfilling. So I think it changes.
Yeah. I think making it, like, when we first set out on YouTube and just in our company, we said we want to have a creative office on the west side of Los Angeles, and we want to have a team that we enjoy collaborating with every day. Those are the two things that define making it for us. And obviously, like, if we had both those things, we'd be in a financial situation that was positive. And both those things have happened now. And that forced me to look at this concept of making it and being like, so have I made it? Because that's what I set out for. And what I recognize is, like, yes, I have. And now either I'm, like, fully fulfilled in this moment and being like, this is making it. I'm going to show up to this office and solve creative problems with the team that we've built. Or I'm going to come up with a new, you know, concept of what making it means and then go for that. And then once that happens, do it again.
It's hard for me to believe that you would think that right now at the age of 33, almost 34, that you could do this for the rest of your life, that this right now is making it and that's
right.
For the next, like, 40 years,
sure.
You're just going to do that, right?
Yeah, some version. I think it'd be some version of it, but, like, yeah, I would just urge you to just write out what making it feels like for you. Like, what are you doing every day when you've made it? That's a very important thing to do. And then you can have a compass to where you're going towards. And the last thing I'll say is, like, from experience over the past couple years, like, you do have time for your friends and family. You do have time for all of that, because YouTube is a very long road. It's a very long game. If you miss a week or you take a break for a week, like, it's okay. It's a very long game. So that's what I'd say. I'd love to hear everyone else's perspective in the comments. Like, what is your definition of making it? What does that mean? And what does it mean to chase this dream of being a YouTube creator right now? All right, next question comes from the YouTube channel Diaries of a Plant Girl. That's pretty fun. Do you recommend a creator signing with a management agency? I have around 300,000 on TikTok and under 7,000 on YouTube. I'm now receiving emails from management companies and I don't know how to proceed. So far, I've been able to negotiate brand deals by myself, but it is part of the process that I don't really like. I love creating content and would love to primarily focus on that. And at the same time, I don't know how I feel about someone else being the voice and communicating with brands. What would you recommend?
So I think it largely depends on what type of person you are and where you feel comfortable. There's probably no world as a solo creator, I'm working with brands and selling our integrations.
Right.
It's just not my strength. It's not my interest. It's not how I want to spend my time. And that's when I think it's smart to look at some sort of manager or someone that can just help you with those deals.
Yeah.
And it doesn't need to be something where you sign that person for eternity or for a long period of time. It could be on a deal-to-deal basis so that you're not committing to anything and you can leave at any time. I think that's important to understand too.
Totally. Yeah. I think just to go back to the last question, the concept of making it, like, part of your definition of making it is, what are you not doing in a day? Like, are there things that stress you out that, like, you don't want to do anymore? And if talking to brands and negotiating deals is one of those things, then it's a valuable thing to offload and also to pay someone commission to do. So typically management companies, you know, go off of 10 or 15% commission. And when we talked to Reed on our show, if you haven't watched that episode, I would say, and you're interested in management, go watch our interview with Mr. Beast manager Reed or listen to it on the feed. That's a really good breakdown of like what a manager does and what it looks like. But they take that commission, and that is a valuable expense if you don't want to be doing that. Now, how do you get them to communicate? You have to be really clear with them what your brand is, what you stand for. You have to tell them that. Don't let them tell you. And I think you have to have really clear-cut guidelines around what you will say yes to and what you'll say no to. And then tell them, hey, here, this is what I want you to go after. A great exercise is write a list of North Star brands, meaning like, what are the brands you want to work with? Write those down, hand it to the manager, and say, this is why I want to work with these brands, because I think I can make content like this, this, and this. My audience is like this, this, and this. My brand, my vibe, what I stand for is this. Go out and find me these deals. That's how I think you should test a manager. That's how you think you should, you know, start working with one. You should get on the phone and make sure they understand your content. You know, make sure they're actually watching your stuff.
Levi's jeans, Snyder's of Hanover pretzels.
Okay, these are brands you want to work with?
Yes. You told me, I think you were speaking to
those
me.
Those are your North Star brands?
Those are my North Star brands. Okay. The plunge.
Okay.
I know you have a cold plunge. Yep. I'm jealous now. I would like a cold plunge.
Sure.
It's not really representative of the content I'm putting out on my personal Instagram, which is none.
Which is none, yeah.
But those are the brands that if anyone is asking, and I think you were, those are them.
All right.
Would you like to share your brands or?
Yeah, I would say my North Star brands are probably, I think my North Star brand is just Bonza, period. And they did send me a package, which was great.
So
and
again,
it was awesome.
You've made it.
Yeah, I've made it.
This is what made it look like.
Yeah, Bonza and the plunge and maybe a sauna company at some point.
Which is also the plunge because they make saunas.
All right, here we go. We got a question from the subreddit from the Dave Noob.
You want me to try and read that or?
I already did it.
You did it? That's
okay.
The name?
Okay. All right. It's a video question. And it looks like you just got out of the shower.
Hey, Colin. Hey, Samir. Sorry, I'm a bit wet. I just got out of the deep end of your latest podcast episode.
Oh, that's
by the
good.
Way, really good. I saw Jaden Smith there, though, with the one yellow earring. So I don't know if you know anything about that. But anyways, let's move away from the topic of deep water and talk instead about hot water. More specifically, what's a small creator supposed to do when they find themselves in controversy for the first time? So a quick recap of my story. Basically, I collaborated with another small YouTuber, and we both challenged each other to make a game in 24 hours. But to spice it up a bit, we had a bit of a story to it. Basically, I'd be playing the villain, and I would be saying that the other person, my collaborator, could not create a game in 24 hours, that they weren't a real game developer. This was all done on the inside, we all agreed to this. In my video, I presented myself as a villain, and at the end of the video, I even explicitly said that this was all for jokes, it was all for fun, and there were no hard feelings at all. But I guess people didn't really stick around till the end to find that out. Now, it is my fault. I should have been better at storytelling to make it really obvious I was joking from the start. But now I'm in the situation where I polarized my audience in that video. Half of them believe that I'm a villain in real life, while the other half watch the whole video and see what I was trying to do. I know this isn't just going to happen to me. A lot of creators, especially new ones, are going to find themselves misspeaking or saying the wrong thing and then presenting an image that they don't actually believe in. So I guess my question is, what am I supposed to do now? Do I delete the video? Do I make an apology video? Or do I just acknowledge this as a small blip in my whole creator journey and move on and just try to do better for the next time? I'd love to hear your thoughts. And if there's anybody that's experienced something similar, let me know. Anyways, love the podcast. Love the new thing you guys are doing with it. Keep it up.
That's a pretty interesting, nuanced example.
What a specific question.
Yeah. I do think controversy in general, though, is something that at some sort of scale, a creator will have to deal with, even if it's not super widespread. There will be a time when you put something out that all of a sudden more people than normal do not agree with or taking an issue with.
This is one of the most engaged posts in our subreddit. A lot of comments underneath too. The top comment seems to be, I would say that with small incidents and misunderstandings like this, you should just ignore them like they never happened. With so much stuff constantly going around, people will easily forget such inconveniences.
You know, in that instance, because he called it a joke, it's just that people didn't get to that point in the video.
Yeah.
I kind of agree. You could pin a comment on the video. You could send out a tweet.
Yeah.
Hey, like this was actually a joke, but it seems like he's a good person with good intentions. He was putting on an act and he even said it was a joke. So in the long run, that video is not going to have a huge impact. It's going to be a blip.
Sure. I would do a community post and probably pin a comment. Like I think doing a community post being like, hey, just to acknowledge like
Yeah.
That last video was a joke. Like, I think it's completely fine to put that stuff out. Because I think the most important thing about YouTube is your audience is a part of the journey. Like, you are building this content with them, right? So as you're building your brand, I think it's okay to bring them into that and open up and be like, hey, look, this was a misunderstanding. Like, I was completely joking. This is what I said at the end.
Have there been any moments like that for us?
Misunderstandings? I don't think so. Where we've had to like apologize. I think there's been moments where I've wanted to address the audience, but I don't know how.
Yeah, I want to bring that up because I do remember when we made a video about T-Series, which
was becoming
the biggest channel or was the biggest channel on YouTube.
Yeah.
And one of the fastest growing. And we made a video that took off. It has millions of views. Mm-hmm. And in that video, we presented a map of India.
Yeah.
And people took issue with the map of India because that is it's a hot button issue.
Yeah. It's a hot button issue and people, it felt like I was taking sides.
People felt like you were taking a side.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's also been comments in those videos of like, that have been somewhat, I think, like racially driven in a way, right? Of like, or feeling like you should know better.
Yeah.
Because you're Indian.
Yeah.
And those are things that we never addressed.
Yeah. Those situations, like, I'm not positive how to address because they're so like polarized. They're nuanced. There's kind of like, there's no real like right or wrong answer, right? And some people might, again, like listen to that and be like, yes, there is.
Yeah.
But like, I think that's so nuanced that it's different from a misunderstanding of like being mean to someone, you know, or like bullying someone in a video.
That also was not our video to video audience because at the time we didn't really have one. We were making videos about so many different things that video just caught a pocket of viewership. And the controversy was just happening in that video.
So here's what I would say. This is a really interesting nuance between what we do on our main channel and what we're doing here. I think if we had some level of like small misunderstanding on the main channel, we would either put out like a pinned comment and move on, just not address it. Here, I would probably want to talk about it.
Yeah.
And I think the difference is actually building like an incredibly deep community. Like, what we have here with creator support is a deep community. Like, we have a relationship with all of you guys. And that is why I think it's important to address when things come up. In a wider, broader community, it's like, yeah, things are moving really fast.
Yeah.
So you're kind of like, let me address it if it's not a big deal and then move forward. So I think that's the difference. It's like, if you are building a tight-knit community, I would address it. If you're not, if you're kind of building for like mass viewership, then it's like, pin a comment and move on.
Actually, speaking of controversy.
Yeah.
Did you see that a lot of huge creators were sued for promoting FTX?
Yeah. Meet Kevin, Graham Stephan, Andre Jick.
Yep.
Like, these are big creators who are getting sued in a class action lawsuit for promoting FTX. Should we give some context for people who don't know the story?
Sure. I think you could probably do it better than I could. I mean, all I know about FTX was that it was a crypto exchange.
Yeah.
And they were incredibly well-funded. They sponsored the Miami Heat basketball arena. They were doing deals with Tom Brady, with Larry David.
Yep.
Outside looking in, seems like a really reputable company, at least in terms of who's giving the cosign.
For sure. We've talked about this on the pod before. Like, this is a very confusing thing of how do you vet a brand that you're going to work with? Back to the management question, like, that's where you want your management to be really good or your agents, you know, like we have agents who vet a lot of our situations, which is really great.
This is a brand that
we trust,
a long history of treating people well, paying on time, working with a lot of creators.
But even in this situation, I don't think anyone could have been like, FTX might be a fraud. You know, it might be a bad situation there. So yeah, this is a situation where a bunch of creators did brand deals with FTX. FTX was doing brand deals with a lot of people. FTX collapsed and basically lost money for a lot of people because they invested in these tokens that went to zero. Mm-hmm. And people are really upset. And people are upset with the people that they trusted, right? Andre Jick, Graham Stephan, Meet Kevin, like, these are people that audiences trust them with financial advice. They turn to them to learn about personal finances, which is a dangerous place when it comes to sponsorship, right?
Yeah.
It's a dangerous place because if you invest in something and it doesn't do well, it's a little like, you know, and I think what's nuanced here is that, you know, if they're doing a stock exchange like Robinhood, it's like you make your own decisions on what you invest in. With FTX, there was an FTT token, you know, and so like that was a big deal that they were buying, you know, tokens there. So I think the question is like, should creators be sued over that? Like, should creators be fully accountable for marketing certain brands in their content? I don't know. It's a little bit confusing. This has recently happened with BetterHelp, right? Like, BetterHelp is a brand that works with a lot of creators, and they continue to go through controversy of selling user data, which is something they say they don't do, but they did do. And they work with, you know, people like Phil DeFranco and Anthony Padilla. And like,
yeah,
you know, how do you vet what a brand does?
In my opinion, the creators are not to blame unless they knew they were promoting the product and the product was going to do harm.
Yeah.
Like, when you're promoting BetterHelp,
sure,
you're not doing it as a creator thinking that you are going to be putting someone in a situation where their data is going to be sold, because you're not privy to that information.
Yeah, or FTX. Like, you're not privy to what's going on. Like, you are paid as a marketer and, like, as a distribution outlet for marketing. And that's probably why we're going to start to see the larger creators, you know, launch their own products and brands. They just have more control. And it has risk associated with it. But as we start to see some of this, like, I would urge a lot of creators to evaluate risk with brands. And it's hard because, like, how do you vet a brand? Well, in our experience, you meet the team, you ask other creators about it, you see their history, you see how new they are. You know, like, how new is this brand? How flashy is this stuff? Like, all of that is important to go into it, because at the end of the day, as a creator, you're selling trust. You're selling trust to your audience. Your audience is there to trust your opinion, to trust your guidance, to trust, you know, what you have to say. And if you lose that, you lose your career. It's a big risk to say stuff that can't be trusted. That's a big risk. And unintentionally say stuff that can't be trusted. Mm-hmm. So I think it's very critical for creators to vet brands. But the playbook for vetting brands, I think, should come through, you know, management, agents, should come through lawyers, should come through, you know, your own work of meeting the team and understanding their history. But outside of that, I think that's all you can do.
Yeah.
It's all you can do. And then it's like, if it happens, I don't know. That's kind of crazy.
I guess we'll find out with this lawsuit.
We'll find out what happens with this lawsuit. Yeah. All right. This question came directly into our Instagram DMs from Matt Howard. What's up, Matt? Hi, Colin and Samir. First of all, I love the content you both create for creators. It's definitely been super helpful for me as I've built my brand over the past couple of years. Well, that's awesome, Matt. However, I've been really struggling recently to build out my team. I feel it's hard to find editors that care about my videos as much as I do. I know the right people are out there, but I haven't been able to find them. Long term, I want to be like Rhett and Link and have a fully fledged media company. But right now, I'm struggling to find the first couple team hires. Any advice? To go to what he said about a Rhett and Link media company, you know, like, Rhett and Link have built one of the most impressive media companies in our world, right? What's interesting about Rhett and Link is, I would assume they just, by the way, did you see they tweeted that they found the password to their channel?
No, I didn't.
They're going to start uploading to their, like, Rhett and Link channel.
Oh, which is so close to crossing a milestone,
it's
right?
It's crossed 5 million subscribers. Yeah. It has like 4.99 million subscribers. So, like, please subscribe to Rhett and Link's main channel so that it can cross 5 million. It's like, it's really annoying to look at it at 4.99. But what Rhett and Link have built with Good Mythical Morning, even when we went to go meet them, like, they talked to us about building a format that could scale. So Good Mythical Morning is essentially shot live. You know, we've now built this as a show that can happen live, largely because of the lessons we learned from Rhett and Link. We take your questions, we react to your questions. So we're not writing a bunch beforehand, we're curating questions and reacting to them. That allows us to create a format that we can sit down in seats and feel good about the performance of that format. Now, we're live switching it so that it shortens the post-production time. And we're not adding a ton of B-roll and graphics. Rhett and Link taught us that it was about the performance when you're sitting there. And I think as they continue to build their media company, what they are deprioritizing is heavy lift editing. And so when you're talking about building a team of editors, what I've found to be extremely challenging is to scale anything that requires extremely intensive, nuanced editing. I think maybe what you need to be focused on is switching your formats and saying, the reality is, it's hard to find team members that are going to care the same way as you, because your name is also on the line. Mm-hmm. Like, you are Matt Howard, right? So, like, your name, that's your name. No one's going to care like you. You're going to stay up at night to make sure the work is good. But I think the goal is to build formats that are easy enough to scale, that you, your performance, your craft, whatever you bring to the table comes forward in the performance, not in the editing. And then you can scale a team that can put those videos together.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. I put myself in the shoes of when I was working with you on the Lacrosse Network 10 years ago. And I feel like...
Oh, that's a good point.
I did care for the brand and for the videos like it was my own because selfishly, I was getting to learn how to tell stories. And I was up-leveling my own abilities and my own career and getting to meet people. And that was worth it for me, that experience.
Yeah.
But there is a shelf life on that.
Totally.
Like that is not sustainable because at some point I would have wanted to go out and do it on my own in a different type of way, or I would have been burnt out.
Yeah.
But for those years, I did care about it like it was my own.
But that's what's important is that it wasn't a format. Also, we were building stuff that was creative based on our excitement level that week.
Yep.
That means you can't scale it.
True.
Because once you leave or an editor leaves, you're now back to square one.
But the incentives were aligned for me during that time. And it wasn't about money.
Right, right.
It was about the opportunity that I was getting.
Yes.
And I think you can find people like that. But again, it may not be sustainable in the long term.
Yeah, I think trying to find a format where you're like, whether it's editor A or editor B, I can make it.
Yeah.
I know how this comes together. I can instruct someone how it comes together. When you get into creative, very creative work, we sit down on a timeline, we can barely instruct someone because we're like, I don't know. I don't know how this is going to come together.
Yeah.
We'll find out, you know, and that's not scalable. So I think that you have to, as a creator, say, here's my hyper creative work that no one's going to care about like me, and I'm going to have help to create it. And here's my scalable formats. Our newsletter is another great example. That's a scalable format. It's written content. You know, we're able to scale it. We can hire team members for it. It's an understandable format. There's a like job and a role to do there. So I think that's the important thing. It's like, what's your hyper creative format and what's your scalable format? You have to have both if you want to be like, if you want to grow a creator business, or you say, I'm not going to grow a creator business. I'm going to be a creative like Casey Neistat.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, he makes his work, doesn't really have any other outlets. It's like when he feels like uploading, he uploads.
The last thing I'll say is put yourself in the shoes of the editor that you may hire. If you were to go work for another creator, would you care about their channel as if it were your own?
Yeah.
Most likely, no. Like, it wouldn't be equal. Mm-hmm. Maybe you care for it to a crazy degree, but it's not the same.
Yeah, I do think that there's creative ways to incentivize people and connect them to the channel revenue or to milestones, you know, so that they have incentive to put out content and to push it and you know, make sure everything's improving. But again, I think it's about building formats that can scale. Matthew Lunn from Pixar said two things that I think are really, really important. And if you want to hear more about that, there's a pod episode called Three Lessons We Learned from 3 Billion People. And Matthew Lunn was one of them. So Matthew Lunn was a storyteller at Pixar. And he said, every new format you create or every new movie we make, we treat it like a startup. You know, it's a group of people coming together to build something from the ground up. And I really like that picture of like building something brand new.
Mm-hmm.
But that to me is doing like hyper creative work. And that's like, that takes a really long time and is really intense.
Yeah.
The second thing he said is that people are only as good as their incentives. And I think that's a really important line to think about when it comes to hiring and team building. That whether the incentive is like you want to learn about YouTube or that you want to be on camera or that you want to
make money
or you want your name in the credits, like you have to understand people's incentives and then you have to put them in positions where that incentive, you know, matches or the expectation for that incentive matches.
And like everything, incentives may change the same way that your definition of what making it looks like will change.
Can you believe the duck, man? Like a duck exploded on our power line today.
Yeah, man. Duck day.
I don't know. I know we're in the deep end right now.
Can I raise the mood for the deep end?
Please.
So normally we do gripes, right?
Yeah.
I can't do a gripe on duck day. It's just too real.
Do a delight.
I'm going to do a delight.
Okay.
So I bought off Amazon,
$20,
this light that wraps around your neck and it has two small lights on either side. Fits right around your neck really comfortably, and you can read at night. Peaceful.
Mm. That's a sign of age.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I am.
This guy's getting old.
I'm an elder statesman.
Yeah, that's an elder. Yeah.
I realized how old I am because of how excited I was.
Yes, makes
sense.
When
it arrived in the box, I took it out, put it on.
Yeah, I understand.
Madeline was filming me,
yep.
And then without even noticing that she's filming, I go, this is so sick.
I think if you get reading glasses that connect to that light, that's like the ultimate, you know, and you're like putting on, you're like, I got my glasses and my neck light on and I'm in bed. Like that's amazing.
But I'll bring it around and I'll make this educational.
Okay.
There's a quote in the book that I was reading that I wanted to share.
And what book is that?
Smart Brevity.
Okay.
From the founders of Politico and Axios.
Okay.
So this book's about newsletters.
Okay.
And the quote that they shared is from Mark Twain. And it reads, I didn't have time to write you a short letter, so I wrote you a long one instead, Mark Twain. The idea there being that making something short and concise is actually way more difficult than something long. And it's something to think about with formats, right?
That's a good point, yeah.
You and I struggle so much sometimes to put something into 5-6 minutes. But a format like this, like you can let it be longer, it's looser, and it just flows.
Right.
We can put these out every week.
That's good.
I brought it around.
I like that.
Thanks.
That was good.
Thanks.
Okay. So thanks so much for listening to this episode of Creator Support. Also, just a quick question for all of you in the deep end. Do you subscribe to our newsletter, The Published Press? If you don't, would be great if you did.
Are we going to title this episode just Duck Day?
Probably. All right. We got to go and just do something else with our day because we're all really thrown off by this duck situation. Thanks so much for listening. If you guys have questions, put them in the comments. You can put them on our subreddit, tweet them at us, and we will see you next week.